I have had a great weekend myself. On Saturday night, I traveled out to Forest Hill Stadium in Queens, which is an interesting place. It's an interesting venue for a concert. It was the first time I had ever been there for a concert. It was for Greta Van Fleet, who are one of my favorite current rock and roll bands. If you've been following the blog, if you've been reading my stuff on Barstool, I've been campaigning for these guys for years, literally. And last night, I got to see them for the second time alongside the work mom, the boss lady, Erica Nardini, Barstool Sports' CEO, and Jared Carabas, my tag team partner in all of the From the Top Rope content and ventures on this podcast, on BarstoolSports.com, on everything like that, and they were fantastic. If you've never seen Greta Van Fleet, if you've never heard of them, the easiest way to describe them, and I don't mean this as a knock on them because most people do, they're like a modern-day Led Zeppelin. The vocalist of the band sounds exactly like Robert Plant in a lot of ways, and they work with this really interesting bluesy rock, and they were all raised on the blues. They were raised on 1950s blues. It's the same stuff that inspired Zeppelin to make rock and roll music, so a lot of their stuff winds up sounding incredibly similar to Led Zeppelin, and that's a lot of people kind of shit on them for that. That's their main fault, I guess, is that they sound a little too much like Led Zeppelin at times. I don't pay any attention to that narrative, to be honest with you. I think it's the same narrative that Rush had in the beginning when Rush started and they went on tour with Kiss in the 70s. They went through a Canadian tour with Kiss. The main thing that every music critic and journalist was saying about them was that they were a rip-off, knockoff Led Zeppelin. And then, you know, they continue to evolve and they continue to make the kind of music that they're out to make and put their own touch on things, and they become Rush. I think the same thing's going to happen with Greta Van Fleet. I think they just need to keep their blinders on, as Jimmy Iovine would say, and just keep going forward. But it was a really great time afterwards. Jared came over my apartment. We watched the remainder of AEW, Double or Nothing, which I will speak about a ton on this podcast. And we really had a good time watching that show and just hanging out with Erica at the concert. And everything about this weekend has just been a chill, relaxed, fun time, which is what you want it to be, of course. We are going to get into a little mailbag section of this podcast in a bit, but we're not there yet. I do have to remind you, if you're listening to this podcast and you're not subscribed, I would really appreciate if you did subscribe and leave us a rating and review on iTunes or Spotify or whatever you can leave us a rating and review on. If you could spread the word about this show, honestly, guys, I'm having a ton of fun doing it. I'm having a ton of fun inviting guests. Like, we had just had Kofi Kingston on. Obviously, we've had Dana White on a couple times. Ken Knapsack has been on. And then also doing the episodes with my friends, the people in the Barstool universe, the people in the Barstool office, Clem and Rhea and Jared and everyone that's been on the show, Trent. It's been a really fun time. And every conversation when I'm editing the show, I kind of smile and think I'm really glad that we got this on recording and that in years and years and years we could look back and we could listen to this and it's kind of a timestamp and a time capsule of a certain time in everyone's lives. I'm glad that we were able to put out a podcast immediately saying our reactions to Avengers Endgame, Clem and I, and we'll be able to look back on that 20 years from now, you know what I mean? When Endgame is this classic movie that we're like, oh my god, do you remember when that came out? Do you remember what that feeling was like? We can listen to that feeling. So if you could leave us a rating and review, if you could spread the word, I would love that because I want this show to keep going. I want this show to keep growing and getting as best as it can be. Now, I teased something on Twitter earlier in the week, last week, and I said I went to a very top-secret movie premiere, movie screening, not premiere, in the city. I went by myself, and I got my phone taken away. I love when they do that, if we're being honest. It gives me a little bit of anxiety because of the whole Barstool thing and because of the whole always be on. If Conor McGregor goes out and breaks his leg, you know, while my phone is taken away at this movie screening, I might be fired. I don't know what happens. Nothing like that has ever happened, thank God, knock on wood. But I walked into this building. It was like, I don't even want to call it an office building because it's not. It looks like fucking Wayne Enterprises in the Dark Knight trilogy. Like, you walk into a lobby and security immediately hounds you and they're like, what is your business here? Where do we need to point you? Is it the door? So I walked in, gave him my information. I got invited to the screening, so they did not have to point me to the door. And I got all settled in and I teased that the movie was a 10 out of 10, 100 out of 100, 1,000 out of 1,000 fantastic movie. I said it was one of my favorite movies I've seen in a long time, and second only to Avengers Endgame as my favorite movie of the year. There were a ton of guesses as to what movie I saw last week, and a few of them were correct. Those who responded to that tweet and said, "I think the movie you saw was yesterday," was correct. So yesterday is Danny Boyle's newest film. Danny Boyle, of course, the director of Trainspotting and Slumdog Millionaire, the latter of which is one of my favorite movies of all time. I saw it in theaters. I was 10 years old when that movie came out, but I loved it then, and I love it now. I think it's one of the greatest movies of our generation, of my generation, of this, you know, past 20 years, I guess. So I was so excited to see Yesterday. If you're not familiar with Yesterday, the concept is basically the main character is a struggling musician, and none of his songs are getting off the ground. All of his gigs have shitty turnouts, and he just doesn't really know what to do, from the UK. And one night, all of the power in the entire world goes out at the same exact time. And right as that split second happens, he gets hit by a bus, and when he wakes up, he starts to realize that the Beatles don't exist in the world he woke up in. And things are different because of that. So he gets a new guitar, and he starts playing Yesterday by the Beatles, and everyone around him kind of tears up, and they're like, "That's the most beautiful song we've ever heard. When did you write that?" And he has this, you know, strange reaction where he's like, "I didn't write that. The Beatles wrote that. It's one of the most famous songs of all time. Nobody has heard of the Beatles." So he begins to put two and two together, and he begins to, I guess, rewrite the entire Beatles catalog and pass it off as his own music, his own songwriting ability, his own tunes. And it's such a unique concept. It sounds crazy. If you're not bought in and you're not invested into that concept yet, go on YouTube, watch the trailer, because the trailer really does display it a whole lot more clear and a whole lot more enticingly than I just did. But I was so excited for this movie from the instant I saw the trailer. I love the Beatles. I always have. I love Danny Boyle. Just like I said, you know, for the past 10 years, I've been a fan of Danny Boyle. So I'm all in on this. I get to go to the screening. I was so jacked up about it. And the movie could not have lived up to my expectations anymore. I just truly loved every second of it. I couldn't wipe the smile off my face from the moment it started to the moment the credit rolled, except when I was crying, because this was another movie that, holy shit, if you like the Beatles, really, if you're just a human being that breathes air, you will cry during this movie. It tugs on the right strings, pulls on the right feels. It's just so well made and so unique, and there's so much more to the concept that they don't show you in the trailer that I won't spoil. But it comes out on June 24th, and it has the highest of recommendations from me, because every song that played, man, in that movie, it's one of those. Bohemian Rhapsody, I know, rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, and in a few different aspects of the film, I guess, rubbed people the wrong way. And I understand some of them. I think some of them are unwarranted, some of the criticisms towards that movie. But it was one of those movies where every single time a new song kicks in, you know, you kind of get the chills and you kind of smile knowing, oh shit, we're watching on the big screen, you know, the making of Bohemian Rhapsody or Fat Bottom Girls or Don't Stop Me Now, whatever Queen song is playing. At the very least, even if you hated that movie, you got to listen to a whole lot of Queen. And that was worth the price of admission alone for my money. So Yesterday is very similar in that, right? But it adds more, and I thought it was a much better movie than Bohemian Rhapsody. I give it the highest of recommendations, as I've said. I don't want to tease it too much because we're still a month out from that movie, so I feel bad kind of bragging that I've seen it already and that I love it as much as I do. But I'll remind you when we get closer to release date. Just know Yesterday is a hit, and Yesterday is absolutely one of the movies that you should be seeing this summer and this year. Now, moving on, I thought for this episode we would do a bit of a Memorial Day mailbag. And we've been running this podcast for a few months now. There's been a lot of new subscribers since the first episode when I answered some of the original questions. So I've put the call out for questions. I've broken them up into categories: wrestling, MMA, music, nerd shit, and then just, I guess, random shit, the questions that couldn't find a category in that. and I'll work my way through them and answer questions. Of course, if you want to send in questions for the podcast, and I don't answer questions every week, but I will be looking back into the archives. If you want to send them in, you could send them in on Instagram, at ThatRobbieFox. On Twitter, I am at Robbie Barstool. Or you can leave them in your review of this podcast on iTunes, and I will check that as well. So let's get right into it. Without further ado, here is the Memorial Day mailbag. All right, kicking things off with wrestling being the weekend in wrestling we just had. AEW Double or Nothing in Las Vegas. Of course, one of the biggest and most important shows in wrestling's recent history. And if you're not interested in wrestling or one of the other categories or some of the categories, but not all of them, they're all timestamped in the podcast description below, so you could skip around and just get to wherever you need to get to. The first question we are answering today comes from David K. Ruiz. David wants to know what I thought of AEW Double or Nothing and what's my general prediction for the future of the company. David, thank you for writing in. Thank you for sending a question. I really enjoyed Double or Nothing. I watched the co-main event, the Young Bucks versus Pentagon and Phoenix, as well as the main event live, which was Kenny Omega versus Chris Jericho. And then I went back and I caught up with the rest of the show later. And obviously, I think if you watched that show, you would be in agreement with me. Cody Rhodes versus Dustin Rhodes stole that night. It was one of the more emotional affairs there's ever been in a squared circle from start to finish. Cody is so fucking good at those big match cinematic type wrestling feels. If you look back through his match history, Cody has pretty much always risen to the occasion. There's never been a moment in his career where he had this giant opportunity and he didn't fucking take it by the balls and run with it and make it his own. Going all the way back to the face broken, the dashing Cody Rhodes days, going even further back beyond that, the legacy days. He was great in legacy. He was great as dashing Cody Rhodes. He was great in that tag team with Sandow. He was great when his job was on the line on Monday Night Raw, and he had that match with Randy Orton where he lost that match and got the crowd behind him, a character that they weren't necessarily behind prior to that match, just by virtue of him not being on the show every week. Then bringing in Goldust and him having that tag team with Goldust. I mean, guys, I have chills talking about this legitimately. And it's not just because Cody was a good friend of mine for a long time. It's because wrestling, I discussed this with Jamie Kilstein. I went on Jamie Kilstein's podcast. You could go check that out on Twitter. I'm sure I've retweeted it recently. But we discussed wrestling a lot on that podcast and what makes us love wrestling as much as we do. And for me, it's that wrestling is a combination of not only these characters, these larger-than-life characters that are going out into a wrestling ring and settling their differences with their coworkers every week by body slamming each other. That is awesome. I love that aspect of wrestling, but I also love that you get to see the real people. And the more you know about the politics, I compared wrestling to a Chinese finger trap. Like, the more ingrained you are, the harder it is to leave, because the more you know about the uphill struggle that Cody Rhodes has had in his entire career, the more meaningful last night was as a whole. Not even just his match, the entire night, the entire pay-per-view, and of course the Young Bucks is the same deal. They're in this as much as Cody is, as far as DIY, do-it-yourself, don't-take-no-for-an-answer company. And that match with Goldust and Dustin Rhodes as well is another just, he's an absolute pro's pro. Last night was wrestling at its greatest. When you look at that match, that Cody Rhodes versus Dustin Rhodes match, and the entire angle following it, Cody as an all-around performer, there's very few like him in the entire world. When you look at his in-ring ability, his promo ability, his mind for the business, just his mind, there's very few that have the mind like Cody. So honestly, man, I loved AEW Double or Nothing. I didn't think there was a single aspect of that show not worth checking out. And I'm rooting for that company to have as much success as humanly possible, because that will make the wrestling business better for all parties involved. And history has proven that. When there's a bunch of people playing ball, that's what's best for the business. That's when the business thrives. That's when the cream rises to the top, basically. So, man, I loved AEW Double or Nothing. The main event I thought was really good as well. I thought it was a bizarre decision to put Jericho over Kenny Omega, being the implications of that match were the winner would face Hangman Page for the first ever AEW title shot. They unveiled their championship, by the way. It is a gorgeous title. It looks a lot like the IWGP championship over in New Japan Pro Wrestling. And that's always great. They must have been licking their chops when WWE revealed their 24/7 title, one of the ugliest titles ever. Must have just been like a big sigh of relief, knowing that whatever they were about to present at Double or Nothing would be better than that. But I did think it was weird that they put Jericho over in that case. It might be a Tony Khan thing. It might be a TNT thing that they want AEW's biggest star in that title match. I would have much preferred to see Kenny Omega in that role, but Chris Jericho is doing some decent heel work right now, and he's ever evolving as a character. He has a new spinning back elbow that he's going to be using as his finish, so you know, it is what it is, and it gave us that ending angle with Jon Moxley debuting, which was incredible. And I you know, you kind of saw it coming when Jericho's cutting that promo. You're like, who's coming in to interrupt him, and who could be worthy of this moment? And Moxley was the only one that made sense, so he came down, he destroyed Jericho, and then he gets into a big brawl with Kenny Omega. That was fantastic. And they went all the way up to the poker chips on top of the stage, and it was at that moment where I was thinking, like, I wonder if Cody and the Bucks are taking all of the criticisms that fans have had about the WWE over the past few years, such as WWE's pay-per-view stages all being the same setup now. They're all the same, you know, LED, they'll just change the design on the LED screens. Back in the day, I used to love that pay-per-views all had their own unique identity. SummerSlam would have surfboards on the stage. Backlash would have these fucking, I don't know, spinning, pokey, like, hook things. What else? Armageddon would have, like, some bamboo shit. I don't know. There was just a lot of Great American Bash, American flags everywhere. It was cool to see, oh, what's the pay-per-view stage going to look like this year? And going to pay-per-views and showing up, you know, early to see what this stage would look like. So for them to do this show in Las Vegas and kind of at the MGM, kind of give it that Las Vegas feel with poker chips on the stage and what have you, I thought that was cool. I loved that they did that. But yeah, I guess that those are my Double or Nothing thoughts. The best match, technically, from like a purely wrestling standpoint and nothing else, I would say is definitely that Young Bucks match, that co-main event. It was lunacy, the shit that they were doing. And their gear was fantastic. As a guy that used to design the Young Bucks gear, that Elvis Vegas gear was, mwah, it was a spicy meatball, as they would say in Italia. But the best cinematic experience was that Rhodes match. So thank you for the question, David. I loved the shit out of AEW's Double or Nothing. Trevor Harris writes in and says, your thoughts on AEW's first pay-per-view, which we just did, and what would you do to improve the product? It's tough to say what I would do to improve the product, because I guarantee Cody and the Bucks and everyone behind that promotion, they know what they're doing more than I would know what I was doing, and they all have much better minds for this business than I do. The only thing, really, that I could think of from last night is lighting the crowd, especially when AEW has a turnout like they did last night, and especially in a room such as the MGM Grand Arena, where in lighting the crowd, it might have looked more like a boxing event, and that's kind of what they want to go for, I think, is AEW is going after this more sporting feel, this more we are a legitimate sports league promotion feel, which New Japan has gone into as well, and it's kind of how I like my wrestling best, to be honest with you. I like the overbooked, ridiculous shit when it's done right, like the main event of WrestleMania 30, which I've spoken about in the past, my favorite match of all time. They're bringing Daniel Bryan out on the stretcher in that triple threat match, and he refuses the medical service and rushes into the ring, and they bring back the referee from his past to try to make a fast count on him, but he hits him, and the whole spectacle of that match I thought was very well done. But across the board, I would rather my wrestling feel like a sport than like WWE feels right now, I guess. So yeah, I guess just lighting up the crowd is something that I've always been into, and other than that, I can't really say much on what I would do to improve the product, because we haven't seen much of the product. I think creatively, they have their heads on straight. Obviously, there was issues with Pac, who was supposed to be fighting Hangman Page at this pay-per-view, and pulled out a week before the pay-per-view due to creative differences, which is, it's not a great look for them, right, that there's a lack of communication like that, but hopefully it was just a small hiccup in the entire process. I guess that answers that. Brian Hinckley writes in and says, do you think AEW will ever get near WWE in popularity? This is a question that a lot of people have been asking me since AEW was announced. And it's too soon to tell. It just is. But I will say this. AEW has the financial backing to get near WWE in popularity. I think AEW has risen from the ashes at a great time in professional wrestling for it to, you know, give WWE a run for its money. WWE's ratings are kind of at an all-time low right now, and with the booming of independent wrestling and Japanese wrestling, like we've seen the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega and the Bullet Club have merchandise in Hot Topic, and they're kind of breaking through into pop culture, and then you look at just fans are looking for an alternative and have been for a long time, kind of since WCW, really. WWE was good for a few years, but it's always good to have competition and always good to have something to flip over to, and TNA Impact has never really fulfilled that. They tried to do it a few times, but I think AEW, if any wrestling promotion is gonna give WWE a run for its money and popularity, it will be AEW. So, man, I hope so. I really do. Chris Coakesley writes in and says, I'm sure you'll get plenty of questions about Double or Nothing, but I wanted to ask a more specific question about it. Did you think the stunt Cody pulled really added anything to the event itself, or do you think it took away from it, needing to shoehorn in a Triple H / WWE statement? If you didn't see Double or Nothing during Cody's entrance, he made his way down the aisle and was presented with a sledgehammer from his wife, Brandy, and he took that sledgehammer, he walked back up the entranceway, and there stood a chair that was very, very reminiscent of chairs that Triple H has used in his WrestleMania entrances. WrestleMania 30, he used one. WrestleMania 22, I remember him using one similar. And Cody hit it with a sledgehammer. It kind of broke and smoke came up from it. I liked the stunt, to be honest with you. And I don't even, it feels cheap calling it a stunt. I liked his entrance. The one thing about it I didn't love was, like, one little fragment came off the chair and, like, a little CO2 thing came up from the seat of it. I would have liked for them to have had it rigged to really destruct and not just have, like, kind of Party City, Party Box effects on it. But I like the statement itself, and I think it was a net positive. I'll say that. It was a net positive. Now, getting into mixed martial arts questions, MMA questions, Max Mariquin wants to know, if I train jiu-jitsu, this is my Facebook relationship status with jiu-jitsu is it's complicated. I love jiu-jitsu. I will say that. I have trained jiu-jitsu, but it would be unfair for me to say that I'm currently training because I haven't been in months. I got into jiu-jitsu a few years ago over at Alan Teo's school. It is a Henzo Gracie school in Fort Lee, New Jersey. Would highly recommend if you're in New Jersey, if you're looking to try out jiu-jitsu, go in there and giving it a few classes because it's a great group of guys and girls that are training there and rolling there. I went there for a while. I went to Henzo Gracie's in the city for a little bit, and I trained there. I went with Young Page Views, actually, so if you're a Barstool fan, we've been together, we've rolled together, and Young Page Views has rolled separately, too. He's pretty good for a guy that has only been a handful of times. He's got very good fundamentals, and it's fun to roll with him because he's obviously so much bigger and stronger than me, but I also have length on him, and I'm kind of lanky, so it's fun to try to escape the shit he tries to throw me in, but I love jiu-jitsu. I would say no, I'm not training currently. I would say that's inaccurate. I would be misleading you guys if I said I did. But I would love to start again, and I would love to get back on that train maybe in a few months, in a few years. Right now, things are just definitely too hectic for me to go into it. Rob Adler writes in and says, Bob, are you going to be covering UFC Fight Week in July? Maybe get that Dana White office tour for us. Yes, the plan currently is for me to head down to Vegas that week in July and cover International Fight Week, hopefully get as many interviews as possible for you guys, get as much content as possible. I would love to really venture into My Mom's Basement video content, maybe start a whole YouTube channel for video content around the same shit we talk about on this podcast. I think it's been a fun time on this podcast, as I mentioned earlier. I've gotten a lot of great feedback from you guys on this podcast, so let me know what you want to see video content-wise, because that's the next thing I'm kind of trying to venture into, and that is when I would like to get that Dana White office tour with him. And I would also like to make it out to UFC 241 in August, actually, that Nate Diaz versus Anthony Pettis and DC versus Stipe Miocic 2 card. with Dallas Braden. That's definitely a goal of mine. So I would like to make it out to both of those cards this year if possible. So keep your eyes and ears out for that, of course. Rounding off the MMA questions, Frankly Speaking writes in and says, do you think Stipe will get his belt back? I'm from Cleveland, so I'm a big homer, but I think he wins it in a decision. DC is not catching him again. I like Stipe a whole lot. I really do. And I also like DC a whole lot. So it's hard for me to pick between two guys that have been very friendly with me in the past and I've been very friendly with in the past, but I do not think Stipe gets his belt back. I think DC is just a much more well-rounded mixed martial artist. I think he's better in literally every aspect of the game. There are levels to this, and he's just a few levels above. He is a few levels above the rest. He is one of the greatest of all time. He truly is. And Stipe is one of the greatest heavyweights of all time, but I'm not sure he's one of the greatest fighters of all time. And that's the difference between Stipe Miocic and Daniel Cormier. I'm not saying it won't be a great fight. I think it'll be a tremendous fight. But I think DC, the former double champ, will be victorious. Moving on now to Nerd Shit. Thank you for everyone that went and sent in wrestling and MMA questions, but we got to move on. Trace McKenna wants to know, who would win in a 2v2 matchup where Han and Chewie square up against Captain America and the Winter Soldier? This is tough. You're pitting all of my loves against each other. Obviously, Cap being my favorite MCU hero, one of my favorite superheroes in general. And getting him and his best friend against Han Solo and his best friend Chewbacca. Tell you what, and this is going to piss a lot of people off. I'm about to piss, I think, maybe more than half of you off by me saying this. But my gut tells me that my guys Han and Chewie are coming out victorious in that one. And it's so hard for me to say why. But if we give everyone their full capabilities, right? We give everyone all their gadgets. We say everyone is at their peak. Everyone is in their prime. I think Han and Chewie know better than to fight them on the ground, 1v1, 2v2, whatever you want to say. And I think they will take the fight to the skies. And I think once it's in the skies, I think Captain America and Winter Soldier Bucky Barnes will be gullible or vulnerable enough to follow them up there. And I'll tell you what, you do not want to be in a dogfight with Captain Han Solo of the Millennium Falcon. I think Chewie probably takes over the pilot seat. Han goes down and starts firing away, and they'll shoot that Quinjet out of the sky. So, gotta ride with my boys Han and Chewie. You guys know I go Star Wars over everything else. I just gotta, you know, be a ride-or-die bitch there. Brian Warren wants to know my thoughts on the Arrowverse. The Arrowverse meaning CW's list of shows, list of live-action DC shows. They've got Arrow, they've got Supergirl, they've got The Flash, they've got a few others. I haven't seen all of the shows. I've actually only seen one. I have watched a good portion of Supergirl, starring Melissa Benoist, and I don't really believe in guilty pleasures, but if I did, this would definitely be a guilty pleasure of mine, because it's not the best show. It's a little cheesy. It's a little corny. The acting isn't great. The special effects aren't great. Every episode is kind of a one-off villain thing. It reminds me of if you took like the Justice League cartoon from the early 2000s and just made it a live-action show and not changing anything, not changing the script, not changing the story direction. It's kind of just a cartoon brought to life, and it's really wholesome, and it's really... It just, I don't know, it's a fun watch. It makes you feel good. Every episode pretty much has a feel-good ending, and it has a family vibe. There's a lot of friendship, and there's a lot of good character building and world building. So I'm a huge fan of Supergirl. I'm sure I would like the other stuff as well if they're all the same tone. Kevin Smith has directed a few episodes of The Flash. I would love to go check that out because I enjoy his episodes of Supergirl. But yeah, I fuck with the Arrowverse. I'm down with it. Alex Caru writes in and says, how would you introduce Deadpool to the MCU? My answer to this is going to be my answer to a lot of questions regarding the MCU, and it's the multiverse. I think you have Deadpool bounce in and out of multiverses, and every now and then you have him intersect with the MCU. Part of me wants to say, almost just give him all of the post-credit scenes from here on out. We had post-credit scenes in every MCU movie leading up to Endgame. There was nothing in Endgame itself, and the future of post-credit scenes is kind of up in the air. We don't know what's going to happen to him. I would suspect they're back by Far From Home this summer, but if they're not, maybe just give post-credit scenes to Deadpool, and have every one of those be, hey, what would a funny interaction between Deadpool and the main character or some character from this movie be after this movie? And it would be a little comedic relief for everyone. I don't know. But yeah, the multiverse, I would definitely have him appear in his current form, though. You know, if you could allow him to say fuck, allow him to say fuck. If you could allow him to say shit, allow him to say shit. Just make him feel different than the rest of the MCU, because he comes from a different tone and a different world, legitimately, than the rest of the MCU. So make that distinction and have him be from the multiverse. Moving on, thank you for the question, Alex. Gat wants to know who I would cast as Wolverine in the MCU, being the X-Men are about to be added. Honestly, I wrote a blog with Ken Jack of Lights, Camera, Barstool, and we cast the entire Fantastic Four and MCU in that blog, and I put in Kit Harington, a.k.a. Jon Snow from Game of Thrones, as Wolverine. I love that he's got that short, kind of scruffy feel. Wolverine in the comics, of course, is 5'3". Hugh Jackman, who played that character as well as anyone has ever played any character, as well as Robert Downey Jr. played Iron Man, is 6'3", so not taking anything away from him, but just to get back to that more comic booky feel of Wolverine, I would go with the shorter guy. I saw Keanu Reeves recently say he always wanted to play Wolverine. He's a little bit older as far as actors go. I thought they would be bringing in a young class of X-Men, but if you wanted to go for that age range, I would not have any issues with Keanu whatsoever. I would absolutely fuck with that. Ross Jablin wants to know which Marvel team, non-Avengers, I would like to see next in the MCU. It's cliche, but it's Fantastic Four. That's definitely the team I do want to see next. And in that casting blog, I cast John Krasinski as Mr. Fantastic, his wife Emily Blunt as his actual superhero wife, Susan Storm, Hank Schrader from Breaking Bad as The Thing, and Jake Johnson from New Girl and Into the Spider-Verse as Johnny Storm, the Human Torch. Like, I can't take too much credit for the Emily Blunt, John Krasinski ones, because that seems to be front-runner among fans, at least. Fans definitely want to see them in those roles. So, Fantastic Four, yeah, we've seen a ton of the X-Men over the last decade, you know, two decades, so I would like to see a good MCU Kevin Feige take on comic book's most famous family. Moving on, Sol Prensky wants to know, if I could choose one bad guy to align myself with, who would it be? And this is tricky for me, because generally I fall on the light side of the Force, you know? Fuck Thanos, I don't fuck with him. Jeff D. Lowe from Lights, Camera, Barstool, he's got Thanos toys all over his desk, he loves the Infinity Gauntlet, fuck all that. I'm a Stark Gauntlet guy, I'm a Nanotech Gauntlet guy. Let's save the world, not destroy it. Yeah, I mean, definitely not anyone from the Empire or the First Order. Fuck all them. Okay, actually, no. Okay. Daenerys from Game of Thrones, the Mad Queen Khaleesi. I wanted the Mad Queen to wind up on the throne at the end of the whole series. If you listen to our Game of Thrones episodes, you would know that. So, yeah, I guess Daenerys, after she had torched King's Landing to the core, so she would be the bad guy I would align myself with. Long live the Mad Queen. Give me that fucking Hand of the Queen pin. I'll throw that shit right on. Steve Rogers, I don't know if this is the real Steve Rogers, I don't suspect it is, wants to know what the most underrated Marvel Cinematic Universe movie to date is. Again, I think my answer here might piss a lot of you off, but I'm going to be honest. I believe the answer to this question is Thor: The Dark World, the second Thor movie, which many people consider the worst of all of the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies. I love it. I saw it on opening night with my brother. We've discussed it on the Avengers podcasts. I really enjoy the movie. I think it's much better than the first Thor. I don't think it's as good as Ragnarok. Obviously, that's a top-tier Marvel film, but I think it's a whole lot of fun. I think Natalie Portman is way more tolerable in this movie. I think the entire Dark Elf storyline is cool. I think Loki's death scene in this is great. So yeah, Thor: The Dark World. I also think the Ant-Man series is sort of underrated. I guess not by the internet, but by the general public. Doctor Strange, another one. That was a movie that I would throw on while I was working a lot a few months ago. It was just a good background noise movie. I think the visual effects in that movie are the most unique Marvel's ever done. So, yeah, I think all of those are really underrated. Nick Giacobbe, who is a longtime listener and longtime supporter, going back to the From the Top Rope days, really appreciate that, Nick, wants to know what my thoughts are on Star Wars Galaxy's Edge and what I am most excited about for the parks. Star Wars Galaxy's Edge being, of course, Star Wars Land and Disney, Disneyland and Disney World. Everything that I've seen so far, Nick, I love. And everything kind of gives me chills imagining being at the park, and I would love to go to the park. I think we're going to try to make it out to D23 in August, the convention for all things Disney, all things Marvel, Star Wars, live action Lion King, live action Aladdin, what have you, Toy Story, whatever the fuck. We're going to try to make it out to D23, and we're going to try to make it out to Star Wars Galaxy's Edge in Disneyland. Jeff D. Lowe, myself, and Ken Jack. So what I'm most excited about, honestly, it's stepping foot in that Millennium Falcon. It's seeing a life-size Millennium Falcon up close, stepping into the cockpit, going on whatever ride it is that we would be in the cockpit for. I know I'm going to cry when I step into the cockpit, and it looks just as the cockpit should look. I know for a fact I'm going to cry. And I'm really excited. I've never been the biggest amusement park guy, and not in that I don't like them. Just I've never really been to a ton. I went to Disney once when I was 4. I had the time of my life. I don't really remember a ton of it, though. So I am excited to go to Galaxy's Edge, as you would imagine. And PJ, rounding off the nerd culture questions, wants to know my most underrated Star Wars character. There's a ton, obviously. Thousands, literally thousands, but I'm going to go with a more recent one. And Abed Nido from The Force Awakens, he is an X-Wing pilot on the Resistance named Ello Atzi. And Ello Atzi is inspired by the Beastie Boys album Hello Nasty. JJ is a huge Beastie Boys fan, so he named this alien after the Beastie Boys. And I thought that was pretty fucking awesome. So Ello Atzi, he's got a few key lines in The Force Awakens. I think he unfortunately goes down in that movie. But go back and check it out. He's got some inscription on his helmet that actually says Born to Ill, which I love. He is my most underrated Star Wars character. Up next, we have got some questions about music. Clint Donaldson wants to know, this is a really fun question, and I'd like to hear your answers to this one. Actually, tweet me your answers at Robbie Barstool throughout the week, and I'll retweet some of my favorites. So here it is. You can see any band perform one of their classics at any point in their career. What slash who slash when do you pick? I'm stuck between The Who in their prime performing Baba O'Reilly, Bon Scott AC/DC doing Rocker, or The Ramones in any tiny club ever. This is really interesting, and there's a million different ways you could go. Obviously, Zeppelin doing Stairway, you know, at their height. Maybe at that Song Remains the Same show at Madison Square Garden where Robert Plant hits a Does Anybody Remember Laughter? Right in the middle of Stairway. Then again, maybe like one of those Zeppelin Moby Dick performances where John Bonham was just losing his fucking mind for 45 minutes. Maybe you go to the performance of While My Guitar Gently Weeps by Tom Petty and Prince and George Harrison's son and that entire group at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame ceremony. Maybe you go to Nirvana doing literally any one of their songs at Reading 92. Maybe you go to, for me, Foo Fighters at Wembley doing Everlong or doing Best of You. Those were huge, huge concerts for me. As a massive Green Day fan growing up, there's a chance I go see the Bullet in a Bible performance of Jesus of Suburbia. There's a ton. If I had to pick one man, honestly, I really enjoy Paramore's performance of Let the Flames Begin into Part 2, which is two songs, technically, I guess, at Reading Festival. It's probably my first answer to that question. It's probably Stairway. Song Remains the Same, Led Zeppelin. Stairway to Heaven. Yeah, I'm going to stick with that. I think you can't go wrong with that. But I know there's a million I left out. You can tweet them to me throughout the week, and I will retweet them. But, yeah, I want to hear your answers. So let me know. I'm going Led Zeppelin, Stairway to Heaven, off the Song Remains the Same. I would love to see that live. James McDougall wants to know, any pop-punk over the summer? And the answer to that question is a resounding yes. We are going to be announcing a huge show, a bit of a hometown show. It's a Long Island show, actually, very shortly. The show is in July, so look out for that. We got a song in the works. We're about 75% of the way through writing, and we're going to get into the studio as soon as possible, crank that out, And we'll have a new song ahead of that show. The new song is really funny, I think. I think it's really good. I think the riff that PFT has written is fantastic, and the lyrics that we're working on for it are really funny. So I think you'll like it. I appreciate everyone that pays attention to the Pup Punk shit, because it's my favorite thing that we do. Look out for that announcement coming up soon. This is a really tough one coming up from Ashton. He says, top five favorite bands and the accompanying favorite song of each band. Not necessarily the best bands and songs, but your personal favorites. So that's really tricky, and it's one of those questions that makes you go, fuck, I'm going to leave someone off in doing this. So if I had to do top five, starting off right away, All Time Low is my number one. All Time Low is and has been for over 10 years now my favorite band ever. The three bands I was raised on then are Motley Crue, Kiss, and Guns N' Roses. My brother really, that was like my holy fucking trinity growing up, were those three. And that's four spots right then and there. And then fighting out for that fifth spot, you know, I'm looking around, I'm recording this podcast in my living room, and I'm looking around at the walls right now, and I have a Led Zeppelin poster. I have a poster of Hayley Williams from Paramore. I have a poster of Kurt Cobain. I have a poster of the Beatles hanging up. So the Foo Fighters are another one that might round out that top five. Green Day may round out my top five. But my gut is telling me to go All Time Low, Motley Crue, Guns N' Roses, Kiss, and the Foo Fighters. And my favorite songs from each, I mean, dude, that's fucking impossible. Literally impossible. I'll tell you my favorite albums from each of them. How's that? My favorite album from All Time Low is called Nothing Personal. It's my favorite album of all time. I really, really fucking highly recommend you check it out if you're into pop punk, if you're into rock and roll at all. That's the album I've listened to definitely more than any other album in existence. It's an album that got me through a ton of shit. It's an album that I never get tired of, that I constantly go back to. And we're actually approaching the 10-year anniversary of it coming out in early July, and I would love to get the All Time Low Boys on the pod to talk about that album with me. As far as Guns N' Roses goes, Appetite for Destruction is obviously my favorite album from them. Kiss, Destroyer is my favorite studio album, but Alive 2 is my favorite overall release from Kiss. Motley Crue, you gotta go Dr. Feelgood, but I have a strong, strong, strong love affair for Saints of Los Angeles because, well, I'll get into it in a little bit. Foo Fighters, Wasting Light is probably my favorite album from them, although Echoes, Silence, Patience, and Grace is right on its tail. Those are monster albums, not to mention The Color and the Shape being possibly the Foo Fighters' best as well. But those bands all have tremendous albums, and I really, those are the bands I find myself going back to more often than any others. Morgan wants to know my dream music guest to have on the show. Morgan, I gotta tell you, this is a great question, and I have so many answers for you, but number one is Dave Grohl. Having Dave Grohl on this show would be a fucking dream come true. I would probably bring Frankie Borelli on to interview him with me, or I don't even like saying interview because I feel like the conversations I have on this show are kind of more like that. They are more conversational than they are interviewee, but I would definitely love to have Dave on the show. Probably my 1, 2, and 3 dream guests are, I wrote a blog a while ago, like the three people you would want to have dinner with, and it's Dave Grohl, Lin-Manuel Miranda of Hamilton, and Kevin Smith, of course. I've spoken about Kevin Smith at length throughout my career at Barstool. And Lin-Manuel Miranda is one of my favorite artists in any meaning of that word, in any realm. So those are the three. Other than that, All Time Low, I'll definitely have on the show. Like, the people I just mentioned on that list obviously kind of comprise my dream music guests, but I'll have all the boys from All Time Low on. I'm very fortunate enough to be able to call them good friends at this point. Green Day, like all of the boys in Green Day, I don't know, but I would love to have them on. Billy Joe, Trey Cool, and Mike Dirnt. Hayley Williams I'd love to have on. I would love to have Slash or Duff McKagan on. I know Axl would never do it. Axl doesn't do interviews. Fucking any of the Foo Fighters, really. Taylor Hawkins I would love to have on. Nikki Sixx, Tommy Lee, those are two big ones. Oh, and actually, Rick Beato, who some of you may know, some of you may not. He has a channel on YouTube where he makes videos called What Makes This Song Great. He has a series under that name, and he really does deep dives. He's just got a brilliant mind for music. He's a producer, I think he's a music teacher, but all I know him for, at least, is running this YouTube channel. So Rick Beato, go check him out. I would like to have him on the show at some point and talk music with him. Adam Walker writes in and says, what artist made you want to play music and why? I teased earlier that the Motley Crue album Saints of Los Angeles had a very special place in my heart. And that tease ties in perfectly with your question, because Nikki Sixx is my answer to this question, actually. He is the reason I play bass, and it's because in 2008, my older brother, went on tour for the first time with a band called Pensive. But once my brother went on tour, it just coincided perfectly with the release of that Saints of Los Angeles album that I played until it didn't work on my CD player anymore. And the title track, Saints of Los Angeles, begins with this really timid bass groove that the song just explodes out of. And Nikki Sixx, obviously one of the coolest looking members of Motley Crue, other than Tommy Lee, who I always kind of viewed my brother as the parallel to. So I wanted to be the Nikki Sixx to my brother's Tommy Lee, and that's what got me into playing bass, was basically just the vision of that. And years later, I got to play on stage at the House of Blues in Boston, this massive venue, before any of the fans were let in, with my brother on drums, which was like, Frankie Borelli was late. He was doing a pizza review back in New York with Dana White and Dave. So my brother had to fill in, and just playing through a few of the songs was surreal in that setting. So that was really cool for me. And Nikki Sixx, and yeah, I guess my brother is really the reason I wanted to play music. But if you want to point to a specific person in the music industry other than my brother, it's Nikki Sixx. Joey, thanks for writing in. Thanks for sending in a question. His question is, opinions on ATL's new song they premiered at Slam Dunk. So yeah, All Time Low headlined the Slam Dunk Festival over in the UK this weekend, which is a massive, massive pop-punk festival. It reminds me a lot of what Bamboozle used to be back in the day, but over in the UK, I would really love to get out there for it next year. The lineup this year was just absurd. And All Time Low premiered a new song called Getaway Green that very much feels like it's going back to their roots. Their last album leaned heavily on some darker synthy pop vibes, and it looks like they're getting away from that. Between the two singles they released last summer, Everything Is Fine and Birthday, and this new song Getaway Green, it feels like the direction of this next album is back to their roots, which I really love. It feels like the same kind of cycle we went through that brought us Don't Panic, which is one of the best All Time Low albums ever. It came out after Dirty Work, which a lot of critics panned for being too poppy. I actually fucking love Dirty Work. But that motivated, hey, we have something to prove, we are still the kings of pop punk, All Time Low, is the All Time Low that we want, is the All Time Low that we're looking for, and they definitely bring it with this new song, Getaway Green, which is awesome. If you want to go look it up, it's on YouTube. I promise if you're a pop punk fan, you'll dig this song. The bridge of it is fantastic. It's a classic All Time Low bridge, and Ryan's drumming rules. The lyrics are great. Alex's voice is on point, as good as it's ever been. Alicia Murphy wants to know what the best concert I've ever been to was. The first one that comes to mind is the Foo Fighters at Bamboozle 2012, I want to say. It was on the beach at Asbury Park. I was literally standing in sand the first time I saw the Foo Fighters, with the ocean beside me. It was a beautiful day with my brother. It was awesome. The next one is Guns N' Roses on the Not In This Lifetime tour. The first time I ever saw Guns N' Roses, and I was able to see Axl, Slash, and Duff on stage together at MetLife Stadium. They played for 3 hours. They played every song I would possibly want to hear. They played Double Talk and Jive. They played Coma. They went into the deep cuts that I love. It was a blow-your-fucking-face-off rock show. After that, I would look at the first time I saw the Red Hot Chili Peppers at Madison Square Garden with Glennie Balls. That was a really fantastic show. Honestly, the first time I saw Greta Van Fleet at Terminal 5, they blew my face off as well. That was an awesome show. I've been to 10 different All-Time Low shows, and I've never seen them be off once. The first All Time Low show I went to, I always look back to the first one, you know, because you go in with really no expectations. So the first one, seeing them at Irving Plaza was really cool. If I had to pick one, probably that Guns N' Roses show at MetLife Stadium. That wraps up the Memorial Day mailbag. Thank you so much for joining me, especially if you've made it to the end of the show. God bless you. I've said it in the past, I really don't like doing these podcasts solo. We had something lined up for this weekend that unfortunately didn't work out. We had a big interview, a huge interview, Jared Garabas and myself, but unfortunately the equipment at Barstool's new state-of-the-art office failed us, and the guest that was meant to call in was unable to call in due to the phone lines being down. We're hoping to get him back. So I won't even say who it is. He's a guest from the wrestling world, obviously. You know that from me saying it was Carabas and I's interview. But we're looking to reschedule with him and have him on the show shortly. Hopefully we will be able to get that for you. Thank you so much again for listening to this podcast, for listening to me babble on solo and do something a little outside of my comfort zone. Remember, hitting that subscribe button and leaving us a rating and review really does help out a ton. That's where you could leave questions for future mailbags. And please send me some recommendations for A, what you would like to see video content-wise, B, who you would like to see on the show, and C, not a recommendation, but send in your answer to that music question we discussed earlier. Again, if you could see any artists perform any song in any era of their career, what would it be? Tweet me at Robbie Barstool. I want to know your answers. I will retweet the best of them. I hope you have a fantastic week, a short week, hopefully, and I'll talk to you next Monday.